Oh, the horn. No.
In everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the sole place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Dominate the guy you're playing against and make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, something called Florida Atlantic came to Tuscaloosa on Saturday and had a bad day. No pun intended, I guess, but I thought the tide was up and down during the contest. What did you make of it?
Man, after watching them play at Georgia in a very hostile environment, I mean, they were tied with Georgia's going into the just a few minutes left in the second quarter. I really thought that it would be a little bit more of a game, at least early, but it just seems like Florida Atlantic was never in the ball game.
No, they really weren't. I know that one of their leading receivers was out, one of the guys that really made hay against Georgia. It's hard to think that one player would make such a big difference, but they struggled even to have a first down up until late in the game. And at one point, we saw a stat that we both kind of laughed at. They had completed passes for a negative yard.
Yeah, I don't know how that's possible. But even, you know, even Alabama, it seemed like with this team, some little thing kind of sparks them and gets them going, you know, because out of the gate, early in the game, they had a penalty for a false start, you know, started deep in their territory, and then three plays in, you know, they get the big pass to Kenny Bell, and that seems to kind of get them going.
Yeah, Kenny Bell's a speed merchant. He had an 85-yard touchdown pass, like you said, on the third play from scrimmage. You know, the players in some of the postgame were really talking about, you know, coach preaching that we start early and we play through the end of the game. And it seemed that we definitely started early with that quick touchdown. That was nice to be spotted seven just minutes after kickoff.
Well, and it was also, you know, just as we see these guys unfold more and more, we just have so many weapons on this offensive side of the ball. What did you think of Cyrus Jones getting to be part of the act? And it seems like Amari Cooper is becoming more and more prominent in the passing attack as well.
Yeah, and then, you can mention Christian Jones and Andre White catching a touchdown and Eddie Lacy putting up 100 yards and Kenyon Drake getting a touchdown. I want to go back to the players you mentioned, but there is truly just a laundry list of players contributing and scoring points. There's not someone necessarily dominating the stat sheet, but there's four, five, six, seven guys that are putting up tremendous contributions. You mentioned Cyrus Jones specifically. I thought he had a fantastic catch, 35 yards, put a little high-step move down the sideline. He's another guy, and again, we kind of kidded last week. All these guys that are going to be stars are going to be contributors and players, and boy, Cyrus seems to fit the mold. He looks like a guy that has the athleticism to come in and compete, not only at this level, but within this team.
He does, and it was just nice that, you know, maybe he just has so much talent you can't keep him off the field, but what did you think about Kevin Norwood? You know, he's one of the guys that we were looking to after, you know, how he finished the season last year. And it's just one game. But are you surprised no catches on the stat sheet for Kevin Norwood?
I think that is a surprise. He's a guy that we thought that would lead the receivers, and he may still. But if you think you're that kind of talent, it's difficult to think that you're going to be shut out. I know that when we talked about the preseason, we talked about this being a significant stable of receivers and who's going to be the lead dog, if you will. And I think we both thought it was Norwood. It really seems that we are very, very effectively, though, using this stable as a true committee. And it's almost a surprise to look back and see Norwood with no catches, but we didn't seem to miss him other than maybe he was out running routes and providing decoy, but we really didn't seem to miss him on the stat sheet at all.
No, we didn't. And, you know, unlike the national championship game when Mays went down, we were like, oh, my gosh, who's going to step up? You know, with having these five or six guys that, you know, can contribute, it just makes it that much harder to defend. I mean, it was just nice to see several guys on the sheet. And it was also nice to see Michael Williams. I mean, I was surprised he had more catches in this ball game than he had had all year. And so it was nice that McCarron kind of fit him into the mix as well.
It really was. And he's quite a weapon. And he's another guy that, you know, kind of silently contributed those catches, like you said, you know, matched or beat his season total to date. We've gone to him a number of times. There's been some near misses, and, you know, of course, he's put up some touchdowns too. He's just another one of those guys that just another cog in the machine is what it feels like.
What did you think about how they're using you know, TJ and Eddie, I think, you know, a quarter of the way into the season, I think we're starting to see a blueprint of how they're going to do things in light of Jawson, you know, Fowler being out. But, you know, this seems like a nice mix of Eddie, you get 10 or 15 carries, and TJ's going to get 10 or, you know, 10 or 12. And then Kenyon's going to come in and get about five late in the game.
Yeah, I think there has been some evolution in his role based on Jawson Fowler being out. And then just based on the fact that the way that he's exploded onto the scene, maybe even a little more than folks may have expected. You know, Lacy put up 100 yards. He had his patented spin move in motion. He looked like he was back to form. But TJ Yeldon is such a stud. Almost at the end of every run, he looks like he's, you know, he's half an arm tackle away from breaking it. I think at one point in the game, you know, I said, look, I almost look at them as co-number ones at this point, because they are both, whichever one you put in, they both seem to contribute. And I don't see much of a drop-off between the two of them. And if I had to talk about one of them having more home run potential, I think I'd go with the youngster.
Oh, definitely. But in the game, granted it was Florida Atlantic, but it was nice to see, you know, when you look at the stat sheet, even D. Hart got a few carries, and it's nice to be able to look at the stat sheet and say, oh, we got four running backs that averaged over, you know, almost 7 yards a carry in the ball game.
Yeah, and that's going to happen when you run up, you know, over 500 yards in a game. And as much as we do run the ball, that was really impressive. And it's something that was definitely fun to watch. I mean, we scored 40 on the game, but 30 at half. You know, we at some point could have just picked our score.
Oh, we could have. And you and I even noticed it at one point in the first half where – we were running a play to Amari Cooper as a, you know, dragging across the middle to the rolling, you know, McCarron rolling to the right. And, you know, he picks up 12 or 15 yards. And the very next play, Amari Cooper does the same set drag pattern to the left. And it was almost like it was scrimmage. It was like, okay, well, we need to work this play to the other side of the field for later in the season to see how it goes motioning to the left.
Well, I like Amari Cooper on those slants. And you're right, we ran him across the field. One was a little more obvious pick than the other. But he looks really good on those slant patterns. I think that, you know, because he's a freshman, we may only be running a handful of routes. And so we want to get him in the action and get him in the game. And one way to do that is now go stand over there and run the same thing again.
No, that's true. You know, AJ had another great day for him. You know, just I think he's really come a long way since that, you know, first ball game opening the season last year where he threw the two picks, and it's just really great that AJ, I mean, what kind of stat sheet to be able to complete 15 passes and three of them be touchdowns and, you know, put a goose egg up for the interception column again.
Yeah, I almost want to shy away from quoting some of those stats because I don't want to jinx him, but he has gone quite a long run without turning the ball over through the air and has really racked up a lot of touchdowns. One of the things, and I'm glad you mentioned that drive where Amari was running crossing patterns from both sides, that drive was, I think, interesting in and of itself. I think we drove the field, ended up with a touchdown. But not only did we, in back-to-back plays, run Amari across the middle of the field,
right,
but also on that drive, on back-to-back plays, we ran little hitch patterns to DeAndre White on that same drive. And so it seemed, you know, it almost did have a practice feel in that, you know, line it up, run it again, you know, line it up, run it the other way this time. We did that twice on the same drive. And then also to kind of put a cap on that drive, we had Steen go out for a couple plays. Ari came in, played a couple plays. Line of scrimmage didn't seem to miss a beat. We kept moving the ball down the field. Steen comes back in. If you're really not paying attention, you don't even notice it. We drive the field and score
right.
A touchdown.
Yeah, I think a lot of people might not have even noticed Steen coming out there, but it was nice to have him come in, and I didn't get a chance to check these stats out, but do you think Alabama's ever had two brothers out there at the same time on the offensive line?
You start to narrow it down to the offensive line. I don't know. I know the Britt brothers were, there were three of them, and I think they came through a couple at a time. I don't know if there was ever a chance where two of them were on the field together. I wouldn't want to bet against it, but I don't know that I put a lot on it either.
Not that I can remember while we've been watching, that's for sure. Anything else that jumped out at you on the offensive side of the ball?
Well, I like the fact that we're still perfect in the red zone in our possessions. We scored on all but one possession Saturday. We had four field goals. four touchdowns. We're still perfect. I think 18 for 18 in the red zone overall, 14 touchdowns. What do you make, though, of the – I'll pitch a question to you. What do you make of the Sims and Eli, you know, quarterback, the backup quarterback duel?
You know, we've talked about this a couple weeks now where, you know, Philip Ely comes in and then Sims comes in for one play in that series and then Ely comes back in. You know, you go back and look at the stat sheet year to date and they've both attempted three passes on the year. And, you know, this is still a big Achilles heel for this team if McCarron goes down. And I just don't understand why, if they're battling, then let them battle. Don't let them just come in and hand the ball off. And so given the opponents we've played or given how the scores have turned out, I think both of them should have attempted more than three passes year to date at this point in the season.
Yeah, I agree. It's kind
if
of
it's a, an audition. If it's an audition is what I'm saying. I mean, we've been winning 40-0.
Yeah, if it's truly an audition, and I think that it is. I think it's, you know, it's the old saying, if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have one. And so it's almost a twist on that. If you have two backup quarterbacks, you don't have a backup quarterback. And so that's what it feels like we're at. And so it feels like we're giving them both reps. We're rotating them in. I think Coach Aldett said he went with a hot hand on Saturday. He's playing them both with the first team before he brings in the backup quarterback, but keeps most of the first team line and first team rest of the offense in.
Right.
So they both get reps with those guys. But I think the balance is this. We're up, you know, because he waits until we're pretty far up on the opponent before he takes out AJ. So at that point, I don't know that he wants to run up the score and act like he's running up the score with passing. He wants to take the air out of the ball. At the same time, he wants to give backup quarterbacks to the, you know, reps to the backups. And so it's almost a, you know, it's almost a juxtaposition. I'm bringing in a backup.
You got to worry.
Run out the clock. But at the same time, we need to get these guys some reps passing the ball. You know, that seems to be one struggle point that we're having. I don't want to say in coaching, but necessarily, you know, in the execution of the latter stages of the game. You know, we're not developing the backup in ways that we could.
Yeah, you've got to worry about your team, screw the opponent, screw their touchy feelingness. I mean, you've got to prepare for later in the season, and both of them have attempted three passes year to date. And when you've been beating your opponent by 40 points, let them sling the ball around a little bit more so you can see which one's going to be your backup when you lose AJ. I think that's a bad decision on their part. And if AJ gets hit the wrong way, it's going to come back to bite them.
Well, that's true. That's true. And I think you and I both agree that there's something suspect or we're not really comfortable with how we're running the backup quarterback situation. But again, I want to put that in the context of, gosh, we're disappointed of how we're playing a backup quarterback when we're up 33-0, you know?
No, it's true, but right now, this is probably the number one weakness on this ball club. If AJ goes down for the year like Jalston did, your season is in the toilet. Right now, yes, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, but we need to book our trips to Miami. I mean, right now, the opponents left on the schedule are not showing crap of anything of who they're playing. And we are our own biggest enemy right now. And if AJ goes down, he's going to get the blame for not having his backup ready.
Well, and you could also say that if the starting quarterback goes down for a lot of teams, you could pencil them out of, you know, what it looked like they were going to be. And so this is definitely something that's odd. And I think there's room to kind of poke at it and not be certain. But I do think it's fun that's what we get to poke at, that we didn't win this game 20-10 and have a whole laundry list of things to be pissed off about. We're questioning the play of the backup quarterback. So in the grander scheme of things, I just think that's another check in the box that says it's a good time to be a Bama fan.
It is, but while we're beating up on Saban, I think we need to beat up on Barrett real quick before we step over to the defense. You know, we have sung his praises, and everybody's going to have a bad day, and Saturday was his bad day, don't you think?
Well, I like the question that you know, tongue-in-cheek asked as we were watching the game. You know, did he have an argument with his girlfriend or something before the game? Because it was the worst game I've seen him play, you know, since he's been there. He either got beat, just head up, just bull rushed a couple of times, or he helped out Steen or Warmack when he probably should have just, you know, covered his man what looked like his man. And it's hard to know. We don't exactly know what the blocking scheme is. It just looked like Barrett was kind of hung out and blocking the wrong man a couple times. I know that they did blitzes and they tried to overload the gap, and that caused some of the frustration. But there were a number of times where it just looked like Barrett was on skates or Barrett was whiffing.
It was the first time in his career that I can recall him looking like that. Have anything else on offense that jumped out before we flip to defense?
Why don't you hit me up with your mini game ball on offense?
Man, you know, I would have to give it to Airy. You know, Saban's been talking about these backups. You know, you play like you practice. And we've already talked about it, but when Steen came out, he was paying attention, jumped right in there, and played four or five plays, kept the drive going, did what he was supposed to do, and probably scored some good brownie points with Coach Saban.
And we didn't even have to call a timeout. I mean, he came in there, had his helmet, had his, you know, he wasn't jerking around with his mouthpiece and didn't have his helmet laying down and had to go tie a shoe or anything. He just ran right in, just like a wide receiver sub that's in a rotation. He just ran right in. You know, they called the play, he ran them, and then ran back out. Not a lot of fanfare, no wasted timeouts, no wasted motion. I think that's a good call, certainly in the spirit of the mini game ball.
Well, who would you give yours to?
I wrote down two names. We've kind of already talked about one of them. I'm going to go with D. Hart. You know, not that he was spectacular, but he seems to be carving out a role for himself. He seems to have lit a fire under himself and is real energized, real motivated when he's playing. You know, he had four carries, averaged 7.2 a carry. Went in and did some backup on the punting. He had two punts. You know, fielded the punts pretty well. Maybe looked like he could have broken one, but he seems like he's really carving out a role on special teams as well. He's on some of the coverage units, and of course, fielding the punts. He just strikes me as a guy that says, "Well, if this is how I'm going to get on the field, then I'm going to embrace it and do all that I can to make the most of it." You know, not everyone is going to be a frontline guy at his size. I think he's disadvantaged in a Nick Saban running scheme. So if he can carve out this type of role on special teams and then get carries in the offense and be productive, I've got to tip my hat to Lil D. Hart.
Well, I'll just go ahead and go on the record and say that I think this will be the last year you see D. Hart in a Bama uniform. We've talked about it. There's other teams who run schemes. He could be somewhere like in Oregon lighting it up. I hope he can do a good audition for another team. And I just don't see the number one running back in the nation coming out of high school being a third, fourth string backup for his whole career. So I think this might be the last year we see him at Alabama.
I would probably still lean your way. I think 2 weeks ago I would have slam dunked that with you, especially with some of the recruits that we have coming in. And he's been passed by two freshmen, it looks like. Or he's about to maybe be passed by Drake. And so with some of the other guys, I think there's an opportunity for that to be true, but we'll see. I'm not ready to buy in on that today like I was 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
We'll see how that plays out.
All right. What about defense? What would you, what jumped out at you first on defense?
Well, I think a couple of the biggest thing, we yielded points, which, you know, that was bound to happen. Probably the bigger thing is that we had no turnovers. We were dominant and imposing on defense, but this is the first game of the year that we collected no turnovers. So that's probably something that stood out to me.
Okay. I'm still very frustrated by our linebacker rotation, our interior linebacker rotation in these blowout ball games. I think the freshman Tyler Hayes has given it his all and is trying to figure it out like a freshman's going to. Tana Patrick's never going to figure it out. And I want to know where Ryan Anderson is. Of the five freshman linebackers, he was the most highly touted, and he's the only one who hasn't seen the field.
Yeah, I think that powers that be, the decision is that he's going to redshirt. You know, like you said, Tyler Hayes played like a freshman, and he may be the only one of the freshmen that's playing that actually played like a freshman, which makes him look bad compared to some of the other guys, which is entirely unfair to him. Hannah is one of those guys that, unfortunately, he's been around a little bit, has never really cracked the rotation. And I wouldn't even say that he's cracked the rotation this year. He's just playing more in garbage time. And unfortunately, I don't want to pick on the guy too much, He's a depth linebacker in a Saban laden recruited team, which probably means that he could start for about a third of the teams in the SEC. But he gave up that touchdown, and it looked like he was pretty clearly out of position when that happened. And it was easy to see Saban stalking the sidelines, seeking out Tana, to have a little word with him about his role and responsibility on that play.
The camera kind of zoomed in on him calling his name, looking for him. And I mean, I know you want to shut out right there, and you can't, that would have been their third in a row, and you can't shut out every team. And hell, we're fortunate to have had two in a row. But I mean, just the effort on that play just had to just incense Saban.
Yeah, I think so. But what's interesting is, if you look at the season and you look at that drive, and that was the certainly the best drive of the day that Florida Atlantic had piecemealed together, but that drive was the most drama that we've seen on the football field. Will they maintain the shutout? Will they get the third one? Will they, will they allow the score? The team's driving. There's a penalty that shouldn't have been called. There's the young players. The starters on the bench are cheering and yelling. The fans that were there that were
right.
Up on their feet. And so
right.
You think about it, there's been some exciting times, but that may have been the most drama-laden, the most drama-filled moment that we've had thus far in the season.
Yeah.
And it's 40
to nothing. What does that say? Yeah, what does that say 4 weeks into the season?
Well, and it's the most drama moment, and it's 40 to nothing at the time. And so it's kind of, I want to call it empty drama because it's real for the players that are out there. But what that really speaks to is, you can, as a coach, you can bark out all of these scenarios and in a practice, but you can't replicate
right.
what those second and third teamers experienced right there. And so they gave up a touchdown. In the scheme of things, big deal, because that experience that they gained in that moment is invaluable.
Oh, sure. Well, I definitely, we've talked about Saban's intensity numerous times, and even on that last drive, they called a violation on the coaches. Somebody had, come out too far on the field, and Saban didn't feel like he had been given a warning, and kind of, calling the ref by name again after the touchdown, and decided to go give him another piece of him. And, I'm sure the players are seeing this, saying, man, he's laying into this ref at the very end of the game. Once again, he tells us to be on every play. Well, he's on every play also.
Right, right. And, they call it a sideline warning for a reason, right? As you get a warning, and I've seen games where they get two or three before they throw the flag. And so in that situation, to penalize it without the benefit of a warning, I have to say that's quite surprising. And then certainly that gave Saban something to get in arms about, and he most certainly did. And I think that speaks also to the second team and the other players that, Saban's fighting for us. He's getting after the official for something that in the grand scheme of the season is in and of itself insignificant. But if he's going to get on the official in this situation about something, something like that, then I better go out here and give my all on this next rest of plays.
Oh, when you said the longest drive of the day, not to read a bunch of stats, but it does kind of jump off the page. They only had two drives for the day longer than three and out. One was five plays, and then that drive was 15 plays.
Yeah.
So that one drive was longer than five of their other drives combined.
Yeah,
their longest time of possession, David, was 2 minutes and 48 seconds before that drive, and that drive was 8 minutes. So he's got some good stuff that he can chew on for that second string defense in practice this week.
Absolutely, and so if that was a 8-minute, 15-play drive, they had 6 first downs on the day, and so kind of do the math on that. You're converting first downs to get a 15-yard or 15-play drive. I think there were a couple of fourth-down conversions there. And so, figured out
right.
they're getting 3 or 4 first downs easy on that drive alone, which is,
right.
75% of their first-down production on the day.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, who gets your mini game ball on defense?
Well, I'm going to go to a silent contributor on the defensive line, and I'm giving a nod to Damian Square. he didn't have spectacular stats. He had a tackle for a loss, and he was in on five tackles. But he just, I think he's one of those guys. He's an anchor on the defensive line. I think he's a settling force on the defensive line. And it's hard to think. We've got these shutouts, and no one really stands out because we're playing so many guys and rotating so many guys. But I just have a soft spot for Damian Square. I had an injury a couple of years ago, and I just think he's a silent contributor on the D line.
He is, but I did think he was going to be more of a standout, and there's still time. But as one of the leaders, I thought you were going to see more flashes this year. And if he can be a solid contributor and set the edge and be reliable and be where he's supposed to be when he's supposed to be, then that's awesome. But I'm a little surprised that I just thought I would see a little bit more of, dominating some plays than I've seen so far from him.
Okay, very good. That's fair enough. Who are you awarding?
It's really hard just because they really just didn't get to play a whole lot and be out there. I'm probably going to have to give it to DJ Pettway. I think of players who have kind of come on the scene out of nowhere and made the most of their opportunities. It's kind of between him and DeVal, and I think I'm going to have to give it to DJ. I think he is showing that burst off the edge that we need, that we still don't have enough of yet. And I'm excited to watch him develop as we continue going through the season.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think Pagan's another one of those guys that is really coming on and contributing and earning a larger role for himself. And that's fun to see these guys that, we were able to list a lot of names at the beginning of the season, didn't know what the rotations would look like. We're four games in, we're seeing some of the rotations, and we're starting to see some of the rotations evolve as these contributors get more and more playing time. And, certainly Pagan's one of those guys, and I agree, Pettway is
right.
Is as well. A lot of depth, a lot of opportunities with those young guys, and that's exciting to see.
We ran 10 guys in there, and, we talk about an intro to the podcast, make their ass quit. Well, if you're running 10 guys in there, you can keep some guys fresh.
Yeah, absolutely. We talked about it in the preseason that at some level it becomes psychological warfare because there's so many guys that we can rotate in. And the offensive line, as they start to get worn out, they're seeing, these younger guys continue to come in, continue to be fresh. And, the next one as good as the one before. And that's two and three deep sometimes at some of these positions. They all each have their kind of their own little signature thing that they do, or maybe a signature move. But when you're facing them in tandem all day, that's a long day's tough work.
No, it is. Hey, jump into special teams for a second. There's not a whole lot that we can really analyze when you're only having one or two kickoff returns a ball game. Obviously, the only thing I think we can really touch on is Christian Jones. Are you surprised after he muffed the punt that Saban let him come right back out there?
No, I'm not surprised at all because he's our guy. And so we want to get him, right back on that horse and get him in action. He actually almost returned later in the ballgame, almost returned a kick. He was tackled by the punter, and that was simply because Tyler Hayes missed, thought that Christian would get around the punter and was looking for maybe one of those safeties to come up. And so he was running escort while Christian Jones is being tackled by the punter. I think if he had taken that punter out, we would be celebrating Christian Jones scoring a touchdown and not talking about that, not talking about the muff.
What did you think about our ability, though, to at least block the field goal and keep him from scoring at that point in the game? I thought that was pretty big.
Oh, I think that's very big. It's nice to see a block, Jesse Williams playing that middle position and knocking that down. I think that's always kind of demoralizing a point. A team's going to say, well, at least I'm going to get a field goal here. And then you have a big old DL, get a mid on it, and knock it down. I think that's demoralizing. And I think that really is a feather in the cap of the defense.
Hey, what do you think about Cody real quick? He only had one punt. He only had two punts the game before. This time he was just trying to pin it deep. And so it's hard to assess the yardage there, but boy, I really wish he would get, once again, this falls in the good problem to have category, but damn, I wish our punter could get a little more work.
Yeah, that's true. You'd like him to get a couple more reps. I think the Florida Atlantic punter had, of course, he had a number of punts on the day, but I think at one point he was averaging, you know, 50 a punt. And I'm thinking, man, that's nice to have that many in the average. You know, that's not just one that goes a long distance kind of bringing up the average. He had enough to enough opportunities to bring that average down and to punt over 50. I never want to punt that many times, but I'd love to see that kind of high average. And unfortunately, we're not. If we can get mid 40s, I think that's just going to be what we get. But if we only have to punt once a ball game, I guess I wouldn't be too disappointed if you or I were out there doing the punting.
No, that's true. I guess it just falls under that category when we do finally play somebody that gives us a ball game, we just want him to be in that situation and have to deliver. Anything else on special teams?
I'm just going to call his name out because he had another 52-yarder, but Cade Foster seems to be kicking with confidence. I'm glad to see that.
Yes, it's nice to, under the Saban, you know, 40 starters that he utilizes, it's nice he can bring in a kicker too, and he can deliver two long field goals. It's, you know, Saban's got all the answers, it seems like, at this point. What do you think about our next opponent? Are we going to see the team that got spanked by Texas, or are we going to see the team that whooped up on a defenseless Tulane?
Wow, Tulane must really be toothless to get, you know, railroaded by Ole Miss. I'll say that Hugh Freeze has looked better at Ole Miss than I expected them to be. I couldn't quote the record, but I think they might be 3-1. You know, obviously that huge loss to Texas, but you know, they're fighting. They're more competitive. Even in that Texas game, I thought they were fighting, and they put up a battle. They were just outmatched. And so I imagine we'll see something like that. I think they'll put up points. It may be, 13, 14 points. You know, 13 would be three scores with a couple field goals. So I probably lean towards 13. But I don't see us coming below our average, you know, which is in the mid-40s. So, you know, if it's 45-13 kind of ball game, I don't know how we get to 45 necessarily. But, you know, if we're in the mid-40s to 13, that's about what I would see.
Well, apparently Ole Miss is running the ball pretty effectively, but that's the only thing they're really doing well on offense. And you know, defense, they're giving up, I think they're averaging giving up somewhere in the mid-20s. And so I think they rank somewhere in the middle of the tier of all the teams. And so I would hope that this team cannot put up 14 points on us, just based on how we have played up to this point. I would hope we see something like a 48-7 kind of ball game, or even a 48-6, and we give up a couple long field goals. I'm not sure what kind of a kicker they have, but I would be disappointed if Ole Miss is able, with what they've shown year to date, to put up 14 points on us.
Okay. I'm not sure that I say four, and it's you know, it's a difference of a point. I'm not sure I say 14 because I know that's two touchdowns, but 13 I could see, you know, almost an accidental touchdown. You know, someone gets behind somebody in coverage, and then maybe they get a couple good bounces on some bad punts, get in field goal position, and then hit a couple long kicks. So I think it's insignificant, but I do think there's a big difference between, you know, getting a couple long kicks with maybe a garbage touchdown versus them actually running out and putting up two touchdowns. Or maybe I'm making it a bigger difference than it really is. But
what you're saying. But we definitely need to go ahead and get our and find our hotel, man, and get our reservations made. I think it's a good time to be a Bama fan right now. And these other teams out there, LSU adds to that category. I mean, you and I sat there and watched it, and, you know, if we were betting in Vegas, we would have lost our ass that LSU, you know, squeaks out a 12-10 victory over hapless Auburn.
Yeah, that was definitely a surprising final. I expected more out of LSU in that territory. You know, Auburn came out and played with some passion and emotion, and I certainly don't want to discount that, but probably the biggest thing that stood out to me, you know, Lemonnier, he looked, you know, like a force, and so he stood out. But another thing that stood out to me was just, you know, Zach Mettenberger just did not look like a top-notch SEC quarterback, and so he's got to improve significantly as the season wears on.
No, he doesn't.
Well,
he needs to stay just like he is.
Well, I see his elongated arm motion, and he lowers the ball. you know, all the things that they kind of talk about Tebow doing wrong with his motion, it seems that Mettenberger does a lot of those things. And I can just see our defensive backs, you know, kind of licking their chops at that kind of motion. Not that they need to be breaking down LSU film just yet, but that's something that we'll have to keep an eye on and see if he does develop as the season wears on.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Man, I've enjoyed it.
Absolutely. This has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast, and we appreciate everyone tuning in. For those listening, we'd like to ask a couple favors so you can engage with us and help support the program. If you're listening on iTunes, if you'll hit us up on iTunes and give us a good 5-star review, we'd greatly appreciate that. If you want to visit us at our website, sign up for our newsletter. That's certainly something we'd appreciate. You'll have an email delivered to you every time we drop a new show, so that'll be hand-delivered to you there. And if you don't want to do either of those, just reach out on the website and drop us an email and let us know what you like, what you don't like. Let us know if there's any questions you'd like for us to ask about Alabama. We'll certainly take those on as well. All of this, I'll put them in the show notes at alabamafootballpodcast.com. And like I said, we appreciate you listening. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.